Blog Talk Radio.
Hello! Hello! Hello!
Welcome! Thank you, everybody, for coming. I am Golden Hawk. You have arrived at another reality show, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be discussing... Oh, we're going to be discussing many, many amazing topics. The focus, actually, of our discussion tonight is something that everyone who knows me from Facebook knows I'm pretty passionate about, and that is shifting the illusion from, you know, experiencing our life from the mirror to back into the awareness of self. And, you know, blessed be from the law of attraction, me and my guest tonight, you know, I read her book. It's fabulous. There's a new twist to it. You know, I'll let her describe it and everything, but it really is very much in tune with the things that I resonate deeply with. So we're going to get to that in a minute. I really want to share with everybody something that happened to me this week, which is pretty amazing. So, I have been. It's funny because this is. How do I put this? Life at this point for me is really a daily excavation into my experiences and my existence, because from all the teachers that I've been following for the last 15 years and going through my own personal awakening, I'm really getting to the space where my beliefs are really the structures of my experience. And it's funny because there was definitely a point in time in my life when my goal and my intent was to really get off and out of this planet and this body and be done with planet Earth. I associated the planet and my body with pain. But I have since, in the last 15 years, I'm not quite sure when the shift took place, but I have since found that the joy is really in grounding myself directly in this body and directly into the planet, which is such a dynamic. It's a paradox. You know, go into the pain and find the joy. I know what all you guys are saying. It's like, you know, how could that be? You know, you would think if you go into the pain, it's going to swallow you up and, you know, and basically spit you out in more pain. But that has not been my experience at all. And the insight that I got today, I really want to share because, I mean, it's so amazing. So many of the teachers, Bashar and the channelers, Adamus with the Crimson Circle, they're all kind of focusing our attention right now on our beliefs and our feelings. I mean, the ascension process is definitely a focus of our emotions, our feelings, and the work I'm doing with the earth is helping me understand that sensations are different than emotions. Emotions are something I've labeled, I am sad, I am happy, I am joyful, I am pissed off. But sensations are different. Sensations, and I'm learning, they can happen, but it seems for me anyway, sensations are neutral. So a tightness in my belly might be associated with anger or fear, but when I'm in nature and I just feel that tightness, I'm not necessarily afraid of it. I'm just noticing the tightness, or I'm noticing the relaxedness and the expansion of being relaxed. So recently... I have the wisdom that silence is golden. I mean, when I'm in the forest, the silence speaks to me through, I will garnish insights. I will come home from spending time in the forest and feel tremendously peaceful, tremendously blessed, tremendously loved. And so my big insight just today that I got, which I can't even tell you how invigorating this insight has just been, like a shot of wisdom and a shot of adrenaline for me, is that so most of the things that I focus on in life, the forest, my nanny work, which has been infants and toddlers for the majority of my nannying career, which is spanning over 20 years, and animals. I have always wanted to be a voice for that which did not have a voice. So that's nature, animals, and infants. And I've always felt very comfortable in the nonverbal communication of these beings. Well, today I totally got the hit that silence from an intimate partner is also divine. And it's like it just totally hit me that if my partner, it doesn't even have to be my intimate partner, even just friends, any human being, any relationship I'm having with human beings, just because people don't decide to talk, that doesn't mean communication has ended. In fact, similar to the way I experienced the forest and the children and the animals, I haven't lost my ability to be telepathic or tele-empathic. But when I believed that it was a negative experience because the people in my life, if they stopped talking, my belief was that it's a negative relationship. That is a sign that that the relationship doesn't have communication, and communication is the foundation of all relationships. Today, the insight clearly came that I am absolutely still in communication with everything, including the human being that doesn't physically communicate with me. And because of my ability to be telepathic with the rest of the cosmos, anything from trees and rocks and water to children and animals and plants, the insight was just, it shifted me so profoundly that for the first time in 45 years, I can actually say I don't have a single block going on in my life right now. I mean, this was a real big one for me, and I'm really grateful for all of the people on Facebook that support me. I'm totally grateful to my mastermind group that clearly, energetically has been supporting me. We've been meeting for this. We've had 5 or 6 weeks, and my life is changing. I highly, highly recommend people creating these mastermind groups. And at some point in the future, I plan on having them on the air to share with everybody how supportive energetically it really is to have a group that is energetically aware and supportive of each other. It's making all the difference in my world. And so I just wanted to say thank you. I also want to thank the audience because you guys supporting me on the air and for doing this for 6 years is also, you know, really, it means a lot to me. My heart is opening up, and it's fantastic, and I'm honored, and, you know, life is good. It only took me 45 years, and I can actually say life is very good for this golden hawk right now, and I couldn't be more delighted. And on that note, let's invite our essence in, our weekly invitation that we ask our essence to join us fully in our bodies. Recognizing that we are spiritualizing matter. We are not looking to escape what we have created on planet Earth. We are planet Earth. The ascension is about expanding our awareness. It's not about eliminating anything. It's not about kicking our ego's butt or you know, beating up the dark side. None of that. This is about the understanding and the compassion and the wisdom to know that we came into a space of duality, to learn how things were created. And in the learning of that, we learned more about who we are, and the cycle is coming to an end, and in that ending, the unification is happening, you know, for us. So we're going through this process. The Earth is going through it. We are going through it. It's an incredible journey. Our souls are going through it, and they are absolutely delight when the 3D consciousness invites it into the body. I really believe that, like, all you have to do is know, how does it feel when you get invited to the party? You feel good. Well, your soul feels the same way about you. There's a party going on planet Earth right now, and your soul very much wants to be a part of this. This is, we don't have to protect our souls anymore. The soul isn't fragile. The soul can handle all the duality as well as the unification that's happening as naturally as it happened when we came from a space of oneness and separated ourselves to experience this in the first place. So I'm very delighted, and I feel fantastic, and okay, on with the show. I have a first-time guest on tonight. I really enjoy when I have new people come on the show, and I'm not sure of her style in speaking, but I know she writes a hell of a book. Her name is Betsy Otter Thompson, and I just love, because we're definitely going to talk about, I mean, if that's your high totem, the otter, you just know that she's a playful human being. You can really get that from her writing as well. And the book Walking Through Illusion is a very, very interesting book. I definitely want to discuss the book because most of my listeners know I don't really play with any kind of organized religion, nothing to that effect. And mostly I don't really even dabble in, you know, the mode of Jesus because it can be misinterpreted. My perception of Jesus is basically he was this amazing healer that, you know, was clearly, from my perspective, clearly telling the people of the planet, listen, you see who I am? You guys are this too. You know, all you have to do is, you know, basically align your frequency and you'll do as I did, you'll do as I do, and even greater. I mean, that was one of the things he said. And Betsy's ability to have intimate conversations with Jesus and also take historical information and show you a new perspective with it, which is what I'm learning through all of this wisdom that is coming through me. This is about expanding our perception. She does it brilliantly. And when I find that, you know me, I'm going to have him on the show. So please help me welcome Betsy to the show. Welcome to the show, Betsy.
Thank you, Zoli, for such a wonderful introduction. That's beautiful. I love
it. Oh, my pleasure. It's sincerely, you know, you took on a tough subject.
Well, you know, I didn't. It all happened because when I realized I had the gift, I mean, I actually realized I had the gift when I was 5, but I didn't honor the gift until midlife. And when I did decide to honor the gift, I asked myself, if I can ask spirit a question, and I can ask any spirit a question I want to ask, what do I want to know? And so that's how it began, because I was curious about Jesus. I had been raised Episcopalian, but I hadn't been in the church for years and years and had left it with a feeling that it was it didn't suit me anymore, it didn't suit my growth, and I had just moved on to something else, although I wasn't sure what. And so I decided I would ask Jesus questions, and that's how it all began. The book is like a trilogy. There are 3 books, and Walking Through Illusion is the middle book. And so that's how, you know, I started writing down the answers, and that's how it all began, just out of my curiosity, basically. So I was as thrilled with the answers I got as you seem to be.
And, you know, perhaps but just by what you said, it sounds like your inner child wrote this book then.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, I don't know. You know, to tell you the truth, I don't know how, because I say to myself, if you ask an artist where they get their vision, or you ask a musician where they get their notes, how can they explain that? It's just they open their hearts, and then they're ready to hear, you know, something through their gift. And so that's how it is. And so I just opened my heart, and this is what I heard. And the ideas in the book were transformative for me, because when I decided to honor the gift, I was in California, and I was very poor. In fact, I had almost become a bag lady, and I got involved in something called A Course in Miracles. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I am familiar with that, and any seeker is usually, yes, indeed. Yeah, well, and Jesus, too. That's another of Jesus' work. So.
Well, I don't know if it is or not, because when I started studying the Course, there was no reference to that at all, and there was no reference to it in the books that were out. So but it doesn't matter if it is or not.
Okay, I should say that's what I've heard, because,
yeah,
again, I wouldn't know that
that's
confirmed. That's
what people are saying now, but
indeed.
I don't know why they're saying that now, except that the book is very loving in many ways, and people think of Jesus as very loving. But the
right.
point is that I was at a point where the Course meant to me about taking responsibility for my life, because the first half of my life was all about blaming everybody, blaming my mother, blaming my two husbands, blaming anybody I could find for everything that was wrong in my life. And the second half of my life, after the writing began and after the Course, was all about taking responsibility. And it was a very empowering thing for me, because at that point in my life, things were so, they looked so bad on the outside, you know. I was like in a one-room apartment in California with rodents and, you know, everything was just pretty bad. And
right.
I said to myself, you know, if I, after doing a little bit of the writing and taking responsibility, if I got myself in this incredible mess that I'm in, if I was the one who got me here, then I can jolly well get myself out of here. And so that's why the message of taking responsibility was so important and crucial in the shift for me. And so I said a prayer after I decided I was going to use this gift, and I said to Jesus that I was ready to honor the gift and that I would write down everything I heard, all the messages I heard, but I would need a job to support me while I did this. And 3 weeks later, I had the job that I had for 18 years working for the same man, and started out at Castle Rock in Beverly Hills, and then when he got promoted to president of Warner Brothers, I followed him to Warner Brothers, and then I retired 4 years ago. So it was an incredible journey, you know, and all that, all the working for him was very important too, because in a job like that, it's very high pressure, and I had to learn to take responsibility and not blame anybody for what was going on. And in that kind of
right.
a job, it was really crucial that that happened. So that's why it started with Jesus, because I was curious about him, and that's how the book began, and that's. And the message about it, and, you know, it's all about the people who he knew and he was acquainted with, and how they were influenced by him and how he was influenced by them. And it's not about Christianity at all. It's just about the people. And it's more of an emotional accounting, as I'm sure you realize, than a historical accounting.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's all about, you know, the point of the book being that it doesn't matter when you live on this earth, you're on an emotional journey, and therefore the people then were going through the same emotional struggles and challenges that we have and that everyone has. So I think that's why people are enjoying it so much, because they're relating to the struggle, because it's what we have. We all have. We all have the
exactly.
same.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're all.
Well, it's funny together. Because, I'm sorry, please,
no, I just
go
think
ahead.
We're all in this together, yeah.
Absolutely. That, I mean, the Earth is really, Mother Earth literally is showing me that on so many levels, you know, because that just seems to be the wisdom that is, you know, being channeled to me from, you know, like you. I don't know where it's coming from. I just know the awareness of that is coming in.
Right.
But, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, technology has taken this, you know, exponential, you know, growth pattern in the last 100 years. And, I mean, on many levels, it's made our lives easier, but it has clearly made our lives more complicated, you know, on that, you know, it's like, I mean, it's definitely easier to do laundry as opposed to, you know, rubbing it on a stone and, you know, traveling, you know, we get our mail faster because it's email as opposed to a pony ride in the Pony Express. But what's, you know, kind of interesting is it seems, at least in the Western culture, I haven't really traveled the world yet. I mean, that is definitely a goal of mine in the second half of my life. But it does seem apparent that all the technology took us very much out of the heart technology, the heart consciousness. And what I love about your book are all the wisdom saying, come back to the heart, come back to the heart,
yeah.
feels so right to me, because for me, in my own personal experiences, the mind loves to battle. I mean, the mind, I don't find peace in my mind. I find peace in myself. I find peace in my full being. But my head, you know, I can make it go quiet, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, the more I'm learning how, you know, certain things work and what the purpose of certain things is, I realize that, you know, anything that's keeping me in mind or, you know, in brain is not ultimately going to bring me peace. Because one of the things
focus, because you can't stop your mind from working, and so to try to do it is very frustrating, and I can't think of anything harder to do than to actually stop the mind. But you have discipline.
Well, and I don't think we're supposed to.
You can decide what your mind is going to focus on, and that's discipline. And you can choose to see things in a way that is loving, and instead in a way that is positive instead of a negative way. And I mean, that's what my whole shift was about, because I'm sure that people would say to me, or did say to me when I was going through all my blaming phases, that I was perfectly justified for blaming, that, you know, what had happened to me, I was justified in blaming these people. But the thing is, the universe doesn't recognize justification. It recognizes action. And so whatever you give is going to come back, whether it's justified or not. And I always tell people, we always have our guide in front of us, because the person in front of us is telling us who we are in that moment. And the universe sends us back what we want, what we give, not because it's the universe is cruel, but because the universe thinks we want whatever we give to others. So that is what you need to be aware of. And when you're aware of that, I believe if you put that to use, your whole life changes, because then you're putting out all the stuff you want to get back, and you can't help but be enjoying what comes back. If it's what you want to get, you know, that's about as good as it gets. So that's what the book is all about. The book also says that we come into the walking through the illusion. The title itself means that we come into we come here in our bodies to experience matter, or that which is temporary, to recognize what is real, or that which is felt. So in other words, everything we see, hear, taste, smell, and touch is illusion, and reality is everything we feel about what we see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. Because for something to be real, it has to be real whether we're in form or out of form. And the only thing that's real both places is emotion.
Yeah, that's everything you say, I am in complete and total alignment with. I mean, yes. And I'm telling you, for me, it's always interesting when, you know, I'm an avid student of consciousness. And, you know, like I said, my goal used to be, you know, how do I get out of this place? You know, I was the first 30 years of my life, I was inherently sad or angry or numb. And I have come such a long way, and when I experience things now, it's like I've taken a 180-degree turn where, you know, initially my ascension, you know, like I said, was, okay, I want to meditate to not be in my body, and now it's, no, I meditate to go deep into my body. It is through my being, physical as well as emotional, that all the magic is. That is my absolute first-hand experience. What you were just saying about the emotions and it being a reflection, I mean, recently I've had two significant relationships for my world. I've never been married, so what I consider significant is anything that shifts my awareness. Mm-hmm. And the last two relationships both went into a space where they stopped talking to me. You know, they were like, okay, I want to have a relationship with you. And then literally, now one of the gentlemen, his father is literally gravely ill. You know, he had a massive heart attack. And, you know, I understand, listen, you're really not going to, and we had danced before, so we were trying to rekindle something. And so I was like, the last time we had danced together, it ended where he just stopped talking to me. The communication ended flat out. And I could tell that it was something in me that I was like, you know, kind of like hesitant, going, is this going to happen again? Is this going to happen again? And then, you know, boom, his father got sick. And absolutely, it's exactly what happened. You know, the texting stopped, the phone call stopped. I didn't hear from him for days at a time. I knew his father was ill, but I basically said to him, okay, listen, this is our timing is obviously off. You need to be with your family and your father. And, you know, we were rekindling things like talking about babies and, you know, significant things that we were interested in doing, and that went to an end. And then I had another guy that just came into my life from the law of attraction who was saying, I want to meet you, I want to meet you, I want to meet you. And every time I would go to set up a meeting, he would cancel. I mean, three times he would cancel. So finally I went, okay, well, listen, if you want to meet me and you keep canceling, you're sending out a mixed signal. Clearly our timing is off. And then he stopped talking to me. And what the beauty of your book shows, which I, you know, there are other teachers teaching this, but I mean, your whole book is focused on this with the questions. I mean, I'm definitely, I want to share some questions and stuff. Was instead of me focusing my energy going, why are they doing that to me? See, that's the whole blame thing.
Yeah.
Why are they doing it? And people can spend months and years focusing on why someone else is doing or being or behaving in a certain way, where for me I went, okay, it's becoming clear that I have a communication issue going on. And my first question to myself was, where am I not communicating to myself?
Right.
Because they're just reflecting me, because that's the way the universe works. This
right.
is, I mean, and it was so amazing because Tuesday night I put it out to my M&M group. Okay, you know, it was just so blatant that this lack of communication, you know, it's like everybody kind of knows, I'm 45, I want to have a baby, you know, so I need the relationship to at least be in communication to even have that as an option, you know.
Well,
it's
now,
like,
Goldie, this is what I say to people when they come to me with this issue.
Okay.
They should take a piece of paper, and always take a piece of paper with a pencil and write down, because if you don't write these things down, ego comes in and tries to make you forget everything that you wanted to focus on. So you have to write
okay.
it down. So you make a list. You make a list of all the things that you want a person to have. You want a person to have who you find. So you want a loved object. You want a love object. You want a person to be in your life. You want to have a baby. Okay, write down everything you want this person to have. I don't care if it goes five things to 25 things. You write them all down.
Okay.
After you write them all down, you take them one at a time, and you give each of those qualities you want that person to have, you give it to somebody around you. Because that's how you get the person in your life. You have to be You have to be the person you want the other person to be. You have to You have to create an effect instead of being at the effect. And I can tell you exactly how this worked with a personal experience that I had.
Please. Yeah, I like sharing. That's another thing. I'm big on. We're not just lecturing. Share the personal experience. Exactly.
Okay. I was in California, and I had this person in my life. Every day I would see this person, and she was very, very patronizing of me. She made me feel insecure. She made me feel that I couldn't make my decisions correctly, that I didn't know what I was doing, that I was not doing it right. So it was over and over again I was getting this feedback. And so I was into my work at this time, and so I went home and I said, okay, now I have to put my money where my mouth is, and I have to use the technique that I believe is so crucial. So I wrote down, just like I told you to do, I wrote down all the ways this person was making me feel. And I had a list of about 10 things that she was making me feel, you know, disempowered and like I didn't know what I was doing, that I couldn't make good decisions, blah, 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 on and on it went. And so then I said to myself, okay, who am I giving this feeling to? And the minute I said that, and I say the minute I said that, it came to me who it was. And you have to trust that first inspiration, because that is your soul speaking to you before ego has come in with a chance to justify all your behavior or justify this and justify that. So I realized immediately that I had a friend who was going through, a very dear friend who was going through a time of making decisions in her life, and I had been telling her what she should do, and I had been, you know, telling her decisions weren't any good, and she should do this, and she should do that, and acting like, you know, if she didn't get it, what I was telling her, there was something wrong with her. And I immediately realized where I was putting this out into the universe. So what I did was I called her up and I reassured her that I apologized and told her I didn't know what she needed out of life. I didn't know what decision she needed to make, because that's the truth. I don't know. I haven't the faintest idea what she came here to do. So after I did that, And I also realized that I was acting that way with other people too, because I was so entranced with the ideas that I was getting when I was opening my heart to spirit, that I thought that if it was helping me so much, that it should help other people. And that
Absolutely. They
should hear about it. So I was acting a little bit like, what's the matter with you if you don't get it? So I realized why I was getting this back. And what I did was, after I realized, which is all about the personal responsibility, that I was doing this, and I took responsibility for it, then I could put out something else. So I stopped being this person who was telling other people, you know, how they should live their lives and saying that everybody needed to hear this truth. And what happened was, this person remained in my life, and she still continued to be the same way she was, but it didn't impact me anymore. There was nothing. It was like I had this aura around me, and in my aura are all the feelings I'm putting out into the universe. So if something comes back to me that I'm not putting out into the universe, it doesn't get past the aura.
Right.
So that is what I recommend you do. You have to live that religiously. You have to give, you know, day after day, exactly the qualities you want this man to have.
Because, well, indeed,
he can't help but attract him back. He can't help but attract him back.
Yeah, because that's the laws of the universe. So
yes.
No, indeed. I mean, and one of the things. See, I mean, what you just said, that story could have been mine, because, like you, when I get these awakening things, I mean, the terms I've been using is, and in my awareness, I get, if I micromanage anybody, it will never turn into the relationship that I desire, ever. Because as I micromanage them, life micromanages me. And I don't like being micromanaged.
Right. And, you know, also, I love to share this idea that you have to, if you are be accepting of everyone's path, because would you rather be with a miserable person who always agreed with you, or would you rather be with a happy person who didn't?
Well, clearly I would rather be with a happy person who didn't. Right.
So, you know, the whole idea behind this book is that we don't take our beliefs with us when we leave here anyway. We take the love we found from having them. So it doesn't matter what people believe. It doesn't matter if people agree with you. People, you know, since we don't know why people come other than ourselves, we don't know their journey, we don't know what they've been through in a past lifetime, if they had one, we don't know what their future's about, we don't even know what they're after while they're here. If they have ideas that are different from us, but their ideas make them happy, that's
right. Right.
The only time you ever say to somebody, maybe you ought to rethink what you believe, is if they're miserable. You know, if they're miserable in their life and say, you know, your ideas are making you miserable, maybe you need to rethink what you believe. And then then it's appropriate, but it's not appropriate unless I ask you.
I was just about to say that.
Not
exactly.
Unless I ask
exactly.
You, because if you give it without being
because
asked.
Sometimes people choose misery because that's part of their journey. I mean, who are we to judge that misery is negative, you know, or whatever, or it's not right.
Right.
You know,
anytime you give advice when it's not asked for, it's criticism. So you have to wait for people.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 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 Your book and you, I mean, this is, you know, we could just, I mean, and I'm saying this with all, you know, with all enthusiasm and passion. I think it's incredibly important that we share the stories that really show. That's why I shared the story at the beginning of the program, because, you know, life doesn't change, you know, because I can remember thinking to myself, okay, I'm going to finally get a guy, because I have basically been, quote-unquote, looking for, I mean, it has evolved, but I essentially broke up with a guy, the love of my life, quote-unquote, when I was 30, because he wasn't ready to start a family. So I said, okay, I am ready. I'm going to go find it. And, you know, I was on this mission of, you know, how I was like a classic serial dater. I was just, you know, I would have the list. You know, it's so funny. I watched Sex and the City, and I was the one looking to have a baby, Kristen, or whatever her name is, you know, the one that... You know, she had the lists, and because, see, the thing that I like about you is I made the list, but, see, what I like is that you take it one step further and say, okay, now share that experience with somebody.
No,
that's
it,
new to the list.
In other words,
What is it?
You must give it to that you must give it to a person. So, for instance, I want a person who shares their honest heart. So that's what you want in a relationship. You want a person who shares honest heart. Okay, that means that you need to share your honest heart with the people around you. I want a person who listens to me. Okay, that means you must listen to other people. That's how it works. You have to give the gift you want to get back. You want a person who is interested in children. Well, then be interested in children.
Yeah.
That's how
it
works.
Yeah, no, and you know, it really is how it works. I mean, it's like, I keep telling people, I don't make up the rules, but I'm learning what the rules are because, you know, if you're dropped in the middle of a soccer field and you're trying to play baseball rules, you're going to get pummeled.
Now, I want to ask you something else. I want to put one
more
idea in front of you.
Please.
I want to know, this is an idea that has to do with going with the flow. And I'm going to give you my personal experience, and then I want to put it to you. When I was in California, when I went to college, I had a college education, and when I went through this bad time, I was temping as a secretary. And I kept telling myself, I didn't go to college to be a secretary. You know, I didn't get this education to be a secretary. But the universe kept shoving secretarial work in my face and over and over and over when I was in California. So I finally said, you know, when I decided that I was going to do the work, in that prayer that I said about I'm ready, I said, if I'm going to be a secretary, which is the universe has been telling me over and over and over again that I am going to be, then I'm going to get the best darn job, secretarial job, this city has to offer. And it was almost as if when I said that, the universe said, okay, here's the job. And that was the job I got. And it was a fantastic job that did support me beautifully for the next 18 years. But now this is the thing. Before that happened, I was resisting what the universe kept telling me I needed. I just kept saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something else. And I got so poor that I could hardly support myself. I couldn't support myself. I was in debt. So it's like you need to go with the flow of what is happening. And if a man is not coming into your life and you're not getting a baby, you have to ask yourself, maybe this isn't part of my journey on this earth. I mean, am I going with the flow of what the universe is telling me I'm here to do?
You know, because you're quoting me, because at this point, I mean, I won't even say at this point, I have fluctuated. What shows up is least resistance, I absolutely honor. Because I used to say, if I'm supposed to be in a committed relationship, you keep bringing playmates to me. You know, in other words, people I want to play with, but I didn't want to be committed with them, and they had reasons they didn't want to be committed with me. Now, that's not everybody, but that was the situation on many accounts. So I definitely agree with you. Like for me, I recently said to a friend that she's starting a networking, networking company, or I don't know what the word is, but a networking group, and she's part of my mastermind group. And I said to her, I go, you know, I'm getting clearly that I'm focusing way too much attention right now on the guy, because effortlessly the radio show is, I mean, my audience has been building. I'm joining the network group. I have five amazing people that are doing the mastermind with me, that the clarity is coming in. I just recently bought Dragon Speaks. I've been talking about writing a book basically since I'm 20. So I do understand that, you know, when life is giving you lemons, stop going, I want apple juice. Well, make lemonade.
Yes.
You know, don't want apple juice when you've got a harvest of lemons. You know, it's
exactly. And if you have to,
yes.
If you don't think you have what you need today, you won't think you have what you need tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell the universe that you're thrilled with what you have today, and then that's the way, then tomorrow then you'll feel the same way, because whatever you focus on is going to expand. And so if you think you're lacking something that you're supposed to have, then tomorrow you're still going to be thinking you're lacking something, no matter what you have.
Right. Now, I have found that recently, and I would say in the last six to eight months, the way that I'm processing what you're saying right now is, because I'm flipping beliefs. Like, you know, because at this point I'm realizing that my beliefs are these filters that what I believe, you know, is directly correlated with how I feel and what I see. So, like, for me, I'm very happy living spontaneously and, you know, put it this way. In every area of my life up until this morning when I got the wisdom that the communication is not, you know, not verbally communicating does not mean communication has ceased to exist. You know, there is clearly, and clearly I have the capability. I mean, I have been, one of my gifts growing up is I was empathic my whole life, and the ability to talk to animals. I've always been able to communicate, not just with domestic, wild animals, mm-hmm. which is ultimately telling you that communication is not about the English language, you know,
right.
It's like, and so, and then as I, you know, the nanny gigs found me, I mean, I love children, I by choice used to say, I want to be with the infants and toddlers, never had problem communicating with them, always knew what they wanted, because it's the same frequency that you do with the animals, it's innocent, it's unconditionally loving, it's extraordinary.
Yeah,
and what I'm finding now is my next level now is I'm now speaking, so to speak, for the trees. The earth is asking me to become a representation of, you know, when I come on the air, you know, speak about things going on in the planet. Speak, you know, give earth a voice.
Yeah.
And so prior to this, everything, you know, my business, my creativity, I have a lot of fun in life. I live spontaneously. And I used to say, everything's good in my life, quote unquote, except my personal relationships. You know, those, and I would always say, because, you know, those, I'm like a 14-year-old, because, I mean, I was a drug addict from the time I was like 14 until I was 30. So I get that, you know, there's stunted awareness, you know, because I was not aware. I was numb and I was intoxicated and, you know, I didn't want to feel the pain, and so I didn't feel the pain.
Right.
And so it's almost like, you know, on some level I'm going back to that emotional point in time in my life, but I am going back there now with this wisdom that comes with the security that, you know, like one of my recent insights was this. I used to be phobic about being alone. Oh. I mean, and that stems from being molested, but I think it stems from the whole separation idea in general that, you know, I think a lot of us who are awakening to some degree feel like we kind of got dropped on planet Earth and forgot about from wherever our heritage is, whether it's, you know, galactic or the archangels, wherever people feel their families are, you know, deeper than just their soul families. So my insight recently was, okay, so I started off being absolutely petrified to be alone, and the choices I used to make when that was the case are just, I mean, they're just downright humorous in the danger, in the sheer, you know, like my guardian angels were very, very busy with me in my teens and 20s, just very, very busy protecting me for this point in time in my life, where now the full circle is that there's only me here. That is my new awareness. I mean, the reason why I look at the gentleman in my life and say what's going on with me is because they're a projection of me. They're my projector of my beliefs to show me, okay, well, if communication, like you were saying, instead of looking at that communication as a negative because that's what I felt, I kind of shifted my perception and started realizing I have been asking for an enlightened relationship since I'm 30, since my quote-unquote conscious awakening.
The thing is, you do have the enlightened relationship. You do, because the relationship that you have is always the gift you need. It's always the person helping you to see yourself. It's always the person
yes.
that you need to know. So every moment that you are on this planet, you have what you need from God, the universe, whatever you want to call that energy, you have what you need, because the gift is in the moment. It's always there. So you have to trust that what you have is what you need. Or I have to trust that what I have, what I need. Everyone needs to trust what they have, what they need. Because
I would say it differently than trust. I think trust comes, we are always trusting. The key is, what are we trusting in? Because if my belief is in a lie, because, you know, I aligned my beliefs this morning with, finally it clicked that the silence in relationships is not a negative, because it just became so apparent to me. The silence in the woods isn't a negative. The silence with the babies aren't a negative. The silence with the animals aren't a negative. Why is it all of a sudden the silence with a man who wants to get intimate with you, that's a negative? I mean, like, come on, Goldie.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I love your saying that. And you know what, Goldie? When I always love to say that words are noises coming out of your mouth.
Indeed.
And so, if you don't, and I ask people, if you don't think that's true, you should sit in an airplane next to somebody speaking Chinese and you don't speak Chinese. That is the easiest way to realize that noises are sounds coming out of your mouth. And so it is not the words that make a difference anyway. It's what you're feeling. So if you're feeling something
great,
person with you, that's the communication that matters. That's all that matters. I believe when we came here in the beginning, we didn't need mouths to communicate, because we could communicate without them. And we only mutated into having mouths when we forgot how to communicate without one. So the fact that you have come to that realization is like a miracle, a brilliant, beautiful light shining out from you all over the place.
That is, I mean, no lie. It's what all day long I've been radiating that. Oh, it was such a huge piece for me, because once I got that piece, it's like I'm really starting to understand now that I don't even really see. I needed the relationships to show me that, though. That's the interesting thing, because I kept having these attractions to men that, you know, where I would so-called look at them as shadow work, because that was another thing that I have flipped. You know, I flipped the belief that, you know, the negative relationships are to be avoided, you know, at all costs. That's what our culture teaches us. You know, if there's negativity, you run the other way and you buy a new dress. that's what the machine wants us to believe. And, you know, and I for the last, I would say at least, I don't know, five to 10 years, time for me is, I don't even try and deal with time anymore, because I don't even know what my time frame is anymore. But consciously I said, all right, listen, if I'm not blaming anymore. So I really want to get to know me. I mean, I have dated angry people. I have dated people with guilt issues and blame issues, because that's who I was. I mean, it was, and like you said, it was an easy attraction. It's what I let come to me, not what I let come to me, what was coming to me, you know, because I used to say, you know, I thought I would be having, you know, more the higher awareness relationships, but the higher awareness is in the acceptance of self.
Yes.
That is,
that is
every relationship I ever had brought me to higher awareness. When that's when my focus was what, you know, it's like, so nobody could show up and not have something that's valuable to me, especially like what we're saying. If it's coming to me effortlessly, you know, that's the easiest way to learn about yourself. Because I remember when I used to, because I have control issues, and the more wisdom I'm garnishing, the less control is necessary.
Yeah.
And that is a freedom. Like, this is the first year, well, I should say last September is the first year I decided not to go on a dating service, because I'm a nanny. So for like the last 10 years ago, I would always say, I'm on a dating service because, you know, the men I'm around are either in diapers or married. You know, I don't go to an office with 500 eligible men to find a significant other, so I have to go online to find a significant other. And, you know, there was a plethora of people to date, but ultimately, you know, as my father put it, I never hit it out of the park with one. I mean, I didn't find anyone that, for me, felt like somebody I wanted to have a child with and go and do that lifelong commitment. But But what I'm realizing now as I look back is they were all showing up to help me do the soul commitment of finding me.
Right.
They were all aspects of me beautifully. And when I first saw them, I was so judgmental of what I saw. It's like, you know, because I think that's a hard pill, so to speak, to swallow for a lot of people, to acknowledge what you were saying about being responsible, to acknowledge that, you know, if life is throwing, you know, if the shit's hitting the fan, that, like you were saying, that we're the ones putting it out there, first of all, and then the fan is turned our way, so we're throwing it in, and it's coming back at us.
Right.
You know, it's like...
It isn't like it... It's, you have to see it as a gift instead of a curse, you know. You have
exactly,
to, you have
yes.
to be willing to say, this is what I need to help me, and this is not about making mistakes. This is about hard-earned growth. And that was a big
yes.
step for me, too, because, I, you know, I had to go from thinking that I had made all so many mistakes to thinking that, well, what have I learned from this? You know, that's how I've gone back and looked at things. What have I learned? What did I learn in the first marriage that was really important to my growth? And what did I learn in the second marriage? And what did I learn from my mother? Because, you know, my mother was, she had a philosophy that was like, completely alien to what I felt comfortable in, and her priorities were different from mine. And but the, when I look back on it now, I see how she was the catalyst for me, because what she did was she showed me something I didn't want to have and I didn't want to be, and then that propelled me into what I did want to be, or propelled me toward ideas that I was comfortable with. So she was really a gift to me. And I have this idea of, I see people, I imagine us before we come here, being with other souls, and probably the souls that love us the best, because they're the people who care about whether we grow or not. And so the people are all around us before we come here, and I'm saying to myself, well, what do I need to live this lifetime? I need to do this because I didn't understand this in a past lifetime, or I overlooked this in my other lifetime. And then somebody says, oh, I'll do that for you. I'll be that catalyst for you. I'll be that challenge for you, because I need to know such and such. And so there we are. We're all planning our journeys, you know, what we need to grow and who we're going to be with and who can help us, who can give us that push that we need to have. And these are the people who love us the most. So
I say,
you know, now I'm able to say thank you, because if it weren't for you being the catalyst, you know, maybe I wouldn't have achieved maybe I wouldn't have been able to come to this point where I was accepting my gift. So it's all been good, and it's all about how you look at it. You know, it's all about how you evaluate what you went through, and remember what you learned instead of what you didn't learn, to remember the pluses instead of the minuses, because life is always full of things that were painful, and so you can focus on the pain, you can dwell in the pain, you can bring it up over and over again, or you can say, but wait a minute, that's not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on what I learned, what I gained, what helped me, you know, how I grew, and that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing, because that's where you...
Yeah, well, the quantum leap, in my personal opinion, which is, you know, that's a term a lot of light workers and New Age people use. The quantum leap, in my personal opinion, is going from the duality of having any kind of they, blame, victimize, or, you know, victim consciousness, mm-hmm. to the recognition that it's all created from self. Every last ounce of it.
That's it.
You know, from the first breath we took as a, you know, a newborn baby, to the last breath we're going to take when we, you know, decide to let go of this physical incarnation,
yep.
every single moment and every single experience has come from self. And
right.
And I get that that's, you know, I laugh because I go, it's a hard thing to swallow, because most people, when they're awakening to that, are really knee-deep in chaos. I mean, you know, it's like...
Well,
we don't seem to awaken this when we're, you know, being unconditionally loving and totally supportive. And we wake up to that when, you know, when it really is the hardest time for, you know, that's why humility, I speak of humility all the time on the air and on my Facebook, because it's like that lubricant that allows us to really wake up to how, you know, that it's ugly. But once we acknowledge it, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, then I can shift it.
Also, maybe you had to go through what you went through. Maybe you had to go through the drugs, the drinking, whatever it was.
Right.
Because that was part of the path that was going to lead you to where you wanted to go. And maybe that was
exactly
an important part of it, and it had to be lived. It had to be gone through to get you where you needed to go. So in a way, I mean, it seems weird to say that it's a gift, but, you know, you obviously learned a great deal because here you are and with all this wonderful wisdom, and so it was needed for whatever reason. It was needed.
Well, and I'm with you, like, and let's even say, you know, it's not hard to say it's a wonderful gift because I want every drug addict out there now to know that that their curse can be their gift too.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, you know, it's always funny. Whenever I say I remember, I go, and then I forget. I remember when I had the awakening how important it was for me that people know where I've come from. You know, it's like initially when I first got into radio, I laughed because I tried to be such, I tried to speak with this voice and say things and not and, you know, be this, what I in my vision had as the perfect professional that would speak to people and interview people, and exactly like Howard Stern tried to start off when he first started doing radio. You see it in his movie. And just like Howard Stern, I sucked. I was so bad. I gave such bad radio interviews because it's the authentic self that everybody responds to.
Right.
And my authentic self is about me sharing about my trials and tribulations. You know, if something moves me to tears, I cry. If I, you know, am running with a train of thought and that train literally falls off a cliff, you know, I'm not blaming anything. You know, I'm just sitting there going, okay, I completely lost. Don't know what I was saying. Let's move on to it. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, I love the idea of the curse being the gift because I feel that's what I went through too. I had this, I mean, I felt that my greatest weakness was that I had this vulnerability to the energy around me. And
nice.
Was one of the reasons I had such a hard time in my childhood with my mother, that her energy was very negative, and it was always, I just couldn't, it just was like this icky stuff that stuck to me, and I couldn't get away from it because we lived together. And so
right.
I felt that it was like this terrible frailty in me that I couldn't deal with. It just sort of oppressed me, and it continued as I grew up. And what I came to realize was this ability to absorb the energy around me was the same. This negative energy around me was the same quality that enabled me to absorb the positive energy around me when
yes.
it hit my life. So it was about acknowledging the fact that I was this way, and then allowing it to be used in a positive way. And so
yeah.
I always think that people have the weaknesses are just waiting to be turned into strengths. That as soon as they're acknowledged as a weakness, as soon as they're dealt with, then they become the greatest strength they could have had.
Absolutely. And it's the gift, because I tell everybody, you know what you'll teach? You'll teach what you overcome or what you garnish as the wisdom. Because I try not to use words like overcome and any words that are affiliated with like wars and battle. This isn't about battling the ego. For me, those are very old conscious adjectives. For me, again, this is about the unconditional love. So it's humility and it's, you know, kill them with kindness and, you know, see how much, like you were saying, I can absorb so much more stuff now. My tolerance level of what people think about me and how I respond, similar, again, what you were saying earlier, that because I've transmuted that I'm completely okay with anybody calling me, you know, crazy or, you know, a nut job. I'm totally okay with that because, you know, the truth is my own experience is what I'm living for at this point. I'm not living for the approval of my peers, but I am absolutely enthralled, and I like what you say, if I can help them. Because, like, another thing I got recently is financially, I'm in flow. I mean, I am probably in the most fluid financially when I used to sell drugs. And believe me, there's fluidity there. There is a lot of fluidity there. And it was interesting because I remember saying, I'll be very excited when my since being on my spiritual path, I want to know when that will also create as much fluidity financially as selling drugs created for me. And it's, I don't make the same numbers, but I have absolutely the same confidence that my bills are paid, anything that I desire I can have, because my desires are to be virtuous. That's truly what you know, just tickles me pink and you know, lights me up, and having an insight like I got today just absolutely illuminates my being. And one of the things I got recently that I've been doing, I used to have issues with stinginess, and I lacked generosity. And, you know, being raised by a conservative father, I know where it came from, but I also knew I didn't like it. Like, and I would attract people into my life that just were just so blatantly generous, including the kids now. One of the little girls that I work for as a nanny, her generosity is, I mean, commendable. It's just like, I cannot help but notice it. And I'm like, I want to do that. And the wisdom you shared about giving it to others, for whatever the reason, I got it in generosity. Because, like, I've been going to people's websites and, you know, buying their services or their jewelry, you know, because I can and because I love supporting the spiritual entrepreneur. I love supporting them. It brings me joy. And I'm starting to realize this, you know, literally after reading your book, it's like, you know, it's just going to happen. Someone's going to want to support the radio show. I mean, that's just going to happen. Or something. You know what I mean? I don't even need it to happen. My nanny gigs, I have other things going on. I have multiple streams of income. I have no fears around it. But I'm actually at a space where I am enjoying being generous genuinely. It's not, you know, just a... Because you ever meet the people who do the spiritual work looking for the return?
Right.
You know, I'm not looking for the return. The return, you know, the return is making them feel good. That's the return, you know.
Yes, that's the return, yes. I completely agree. And I think it's, I think when I was, you know, starving myself, when I was not acknowledging the gift, but I had a challenge getting over the fact that I was able to channel spirit, because when I was five, and discovered the gift, it came to me. What happened was my mother was very close to my great-grandmother, her grandmother, and she was always telling me how much I looked like this woman. So I thought that was a definite asset, because even then I was having trouble getting along with my mother. So if I looked like somebody she loved, I thought that was terrific. So I decided that I would see if I was like her in other ways, and I would talk to her at night. And the fact that a voice responded seemed very natural, seemed perfectly natural to me, and I hadn't told anybody I was going to do that, so nobody told me I couldn't. And then I was doing it for a couple of weeks, and it was so enjoyable to me that I said to my older sister that, I told her what I was doing and who I was talking to, and I asked her who she talked to, because I thought if I could do it, everybody could do it. So she was, of course, reacted rather, you know, violently and was to tease me unmercifully for weeks, and made my life so miserable that I started to panic that she would tell somebody else I did it and they would react the same way. So I stopped doing it completely. And then that I put it out of my mind, and then when I was around 9 or so, Ouija boards came out as the hot new board game, and every family was getting them. And so our family got it too, and we couldn't wait to start it because it sounded kind of eerie, and we were at the age where, you know, haunted houses were a kick. So
exactly. I remember being turned on by being afraid. I remember that as well, yes.
So there were three sisters, and we sat down, we started playing this Ouija board, and the pointer started moving, and then the first thing we did was accuse each other of faking the results. But, you know, it became really obvious that the game was excruciatingly slow for three active children, and so pretty soon I was the only one sitting on the floor with this Ouija board waiting for answers, and then I panicked because I thought, well, this is what I got teased for before, so I don't want to go through that humiliation again, and so I stopped. And then it wasn't until I was in California and I was telling my son, who was out there in school, about this Ouija board episode, and we were laughing hysterically about it, and he told me, he said, well, you know, we just talked about it, and then 3 weeks later he gave me a Ouija board for my birthday, and I said,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so I said, well, you have to come over and play it with me because this is a game that's supposed to be played by two or more people. So he came over and we sat down and we started doing it together and we got this beautiful sentence, but it was like something in all that you do say and think you are the love of God now and forever. But it was 4 hours, and my son said, you know, Mom, from here on you're on your own. So I decided the next day that I would try doing it by myself and see what happened, and I did. And the first message I got was welcome home. And then after that, I was completely hooked. But the thing is, I went through a long struggle with it because when I started doing this when I was in California, the Ouija had a really bad reputation. And
yeah.
Supposedly, you know, an evil thing. And so I had to go through this thing of realizing that it was a piece of cardboard. And it was just as silly to say that a piece of cardboard was evil as it was to say a dish rag was evil. It was simply a tool. And it was a tool.
Yeah.
Like an easel is a tool for an artist, or a piano is a tool for a musician, and it could be used in a negative or a positive way. And so I had to go through the process of really learning the rules of the game. And when people ask me about that, you know, who has some sort of a prejudice about the Ouija board, I say, well, you know, it's like any other gift that can be used in a negative or a positive way. For instance, the gift of oration was used one way by Churchill and another way by Hitler. Or the gift of movie making was used one way to create Gone with the Wind and another way to create child pornography. So it's all back to that basic idea that you have to take responsibility for the gift you have, and you have to be responsible for the product. And so that was another, you know, big crucial thing in my life that I had to go through to actually be able to admit to people that I was using the Ouija board and to admit that I was channeling spirit, because I came from a very conservative family, and they still think I'm a little bit weird.
yeah, but, so does my family, yeah.
But you know, it's okay, because you don't really have to agree with somebody to love them, and they don't have to agree with me to love them. So we've reached a nice, peaceful place where they've come to the point where they don't really care how I've grown. They only are delighted that I have.
Indeed.
That's what I thought that story might be kind of interesting to people who
all stories are interesting.
Yeah.
You're welcome to share all stories on my show, because I love that you personalize, because I personalize as well. Because first of all, parables are absolutely ways people remember things better than like a list of rules on behavior.
Right.
Which again, your book so exquisitely speaks about. In fact, I'm just going to focus a little bit more of the conversation on the book, because I want to promote this book, and I'm normally not, you know, I'm normally, no, promote the message, not the book. But, I mean, everybody who knows me, when I read Walking Through the Illusion, I mean, I called my girlfriend and said, okay, listen, you know, at the end of every chapter, here, let me open it up to a chapter. Betsy's created a worksheet section where discussion, she has questions and she has her personal insights and things to ponder, which, I mean, literally make this kind of book so easy to do a book club with, you know, because one of the things I'm finding is, especially with, you know, at the moment, you know, with the last couple of months, my personal relationship's showing me that they're not communicating with me, you know. So I was like, I still need people to bounce things off of. You know, my friends, I learned so much by listening to them in their situation, sharing my situations. I guess it's exactly like you were saying, that the book was so fabulous. I was like, okay, you know, let's do a book club on it. And part of, you know, my delivery was, they were like, okay, what's it about? And I was like, walking through illusions and, you know, understanding, like you were saying, the basic principles of cause and effect. And like you say, be the cause, you know, be the effect, and then watch the cause. And yet, you know, they were like, okay. And then I was like, but it's Jesus talking about all the parables of the Bible. And they were like, oh, no, 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 Goldie. No, 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 that's not where we want to go. So I very much want you, because you, clearly, I mean, you wrote the book. Help me explain in your beautiful way that it's not, because it's not a religious journey, and yet there is religion connotations. I'm going to stop there and let you take
over. The whole idea of the book is to show that Jesus was a person like everybody else. He was a man who came here the same as every other man and woman has come here, and that he had his own challenges. He had his gifts. He had his
his humanness,
growth issues to go through. He had all the same challenges that we have. In fact, with the third book that I'm reading now, it's very evident, the third book that I've just written, it's the end of the trilogy, it's very evident that he went through his entire life without really resolving and finding the answers he wanted until he went into seclusion. And when he went into seclusion, he learned to meditate, and it was through the meditation that everything that he really needed to find, he found, because he went within. But he went searching out into the world. He traveled for a while, looking for his answers, thinking that other people had the answers for him, he would find a town where he found what he wanted, he would find a guru who had what he wanted, he would find a religious man who had what he wanted, he would find a friend who had what he wanted, and he never found anyone who could answer his questions for him until he went within. So he was no different from any of us. This book has nothing to do with the Bible. I don't even know the Bible. I don't know the Bible. I'm not a Christian anymore. So I don't know. It's not about that. And I think one of the reasons that I've written this book, or that I came here to write this book with his help, is to show people that he was no different from us at all. Because when you make him different from you, you separate yourself from him. If you put him on a pedestal, you separate yourself from him, and you don't unite yourself with him, because we are all one. We are all the same. We are all here. We all come here with our challenges, with our purpose, with whatever, and he's no different at all than anyone else. And so the whole book is not about Christianity, has nothing to do with Christianity. It's not that Christians aren't enjoying it, because I've had Christians telling me they're enjoying it because finally Jesus is made personal to them. Finally,
right.
Person
right.
They can relate to. They can feel that he's human like we were. So it's really for anyone who's interested in learning more about the essence within themselves, and it has nothing to do with one religion or another. And I believe that it isn't about. I mean, God is in every religion if the people practicing it have love in their hearts. So that's the bottom line. You know, whatever religion feels right to you, makes you happy, then that's where you belong. But this is not a book about Christianity. So it's basically to, I guess, that when I was, before I came into this earth, Jesus and I got together, and he said, well, I'd like for people to know more about who I really was, and that I went through the same struggle that everyone is going through. And I was there to say I volunteered to do that, because I think that's how, you know, you have your spirit helping you to do what you do, and I have the spirit helping me to do what I do, and so does everybody else. And so that's the reason for the book, is to because I guess that Jesus experiences a lot of separation from people who think that he's special or different, and he isn't. He's the same as all of us, and he had all the. So this book is about all the challenges he went through, and the next book's about the same thing. And he had, in the mirror theory, he had challenges within his family. He had big challenges within his family. So it's not different. It's not any different. He wasn't any different. And I don't think that anybody who comes here is any different. We all come with the same equipment, you know, a mind that can think and a heart that can feel. And it's about what we do with it once we get here that makes the difference in our life.
Right on, sister. Speak your truth. Yes, no, thank you. I mean, because the stories and the characters are from the Bible. The essence of the story, well, right, because, I mean, he makes reference on some of them. I got a little lost because I didn't read the Bible, so I don't know.
Let me tell you something.
You know,
I didn't read the Bible either. And what happened was when I
and you wrote the book.
When I wrote the first book, the publisher wanted to have lunch with me, so they came. somebody who else worked there came to, they were on business in Hollywood, and they wanted to have breakfast with me. So I met them for breakfast,
okay.
And we were sitting there, and they hadn't agreed to publish the book. And he said to me, after we talked for a little while, he said, well, did you do any research? And I said, no. And he said, well, you have to do research. And I said, well, okay, if I have to do it, I'll do it. So I went home and I did the research. And I did it, and what I discovered was that everything I had written was verified, but I didn't want to do the research in the beginning because I wanted it to come through me without any kind of preconceived notion of what happened. And so
right.
The research was done, but only afterwards. I know it's backwards, but that's how it happened. So you know, some of the people...
It's not backwards in the language of the heart. See,
right.
The language of the heart is not linear, and that's another wonderful example that it came from the heart, that
yeah.
you could back up what you wrote even before you knew what you were writing was legitimate. You just wrote.
That's right. That's what happened. Now, some of the people are in the Bible, but not all of them are in the Bible. There's a soldier who he met on the way to the crucifixion that was not in the Bible, although it was in the Bible that he met, that he interacted with some of the soldiers. So,
right.
So, you know, in that way. And then there are people that aren't, you know, it's just the way it happened. I can't explain it. The same way in the next book, there are some people that are mentioned who are known, but there's people who he met on his travels that are not in any book or anywhere. But and it doesn't really matter, because what the book has to offer isn't about who lived or who didn't or who did what or who didn't. It's about whether it touches your heart, about your own life. You know, whether you can
right.
bring the ideas into your own life in a meaningful way. That's what the book is all about, and that's the whole purpose of the book. So. It isn't, please tell your friends that it has nothing to do with...
No, I did, and, you know, I get a little... It's so funny, because on so many things, I experience them, but my words coming out of my mouth sometimes are just... I'm tripping over them. You know, I'm just tripping, because I was like, listen, you know, it's not religious, and, you know, all I have to do is say to my friends, do you know me? I mean, like, what part of me even makes you think I would get through a book and promote a book saying, let's all get together and read this, about religion? You know, if anything, I'm anti-religion. You know, anything organized, just I'm usually extremely antsy about, you know. Even, like, Unity Church, which I used to go to after my mom passed, I needed... support that clearly my father and my brother were not going to give me. And for like 6 years, you know, I dabbled and I loved it, and they would always say, you're going to become a member? It's like, oh, no, 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 no. Goldie doesn't do membership of any kind. And I know that it has something to do with things that have happened to me in my past. You know, I don't need, quote unquote, I don't need a gang to have a family, because I mean, what I've clearly gotten now is I go to the forest. That really, I mean, I actually think that I come from some lineage of wherever the trees come from and plants come from. That is my, that's my lineage, because my heart is so open. You know, I mean, I literally, my mind turns, I go into no mind. I don't think, or I won't say that I don't think, but when I'm in the woods, whatever issues are having an effect on me, quote unquote, in my daily experiences, the minute I'm two steps away from my car and on my path in the woods, I'm immediately transformed into a peaceful, creative, curious being. You know, my child comes out, she plays, I'm comfortable. I used to say, most people are afraid of snakes and bugs and dirt. I go, I'm afraid of, you know, people in a mall, you know, parties of a lot of human beings scare me. Bugs and spiders do not.
Here's a possibility. Here's another possibility. What in a past lifetime, somewhere, your whole life was spent in a city and you never had the chance to experience nature. So this time you came into this lifetime to heal that, and what a magnificent healing you're having!
It's so extraordinary. I mean, because it's funny. It takes some effort. Like, you know, I went to Sierra Trading Post. I now have snow pants and waterproof shoes and, you know, I'm like seven layers because, you know, I'm freezing my gazunkas off when it's 20 degrees and, you know, 17 inches of snow out there. But so the effort it takes to actually go out in the winter is very interesting. But I'll tell you, the snow, to be in the woods with the crystal of the snow, and there's like this blanket of silence that is just prevalent with the snow. I used to say there were three seasons that were great for hiking. You know, the usual, fall, spring, and summer. Truth be told, summer hiking is incredibly challenging because the mosquitoes are just, like, unbearable. I happen to have Celtic chambers and these, like, things that are clearly on ley lines, and, you know, they're hot spots, they're energetic hot spots, and the bugs don't go in these chambers, which is nice. So I can go, you know, they also stay like 50 degrees, no matter, you know, even if it's 100 degrees outside, they stay at a constant 50 degrees because most of them are kind of built within the earth. But I have since switched it. It's like the three best hiking times are winter, spring, and fall.
So that's what
because,
you need. You need that silence.
Oh, totally, totally.
And that
yes.
To nature, because maybe before that was so missing in your experience that you
yeah.
need that great gift this lifetime. So I mean, I think we always come here to heal what needs, you know, something like we had a phobia in a past lifetime. Well, we bring the phobia with us so that we can heal
yes.
it this lifetime.
Yes.
And we bring whatever
yes.
it is with us that needs to be healed. And it's a beautiful idea because I like that energy is constantly going through a process of healing whatever needs to be healed and whatever, wherever love was missing the last time, we come this time to get it, you know, or to give it or whatever. So
right. No, right on. I'm totally with you because I had started saying that earlier that, you know, I was phobic about being alone. And, of course, coming full circle, my wisdom now tells me there's no one here but me. Which really leads me right back to being alone. I'm alone, except now I'm empowered because now I'm the creator of everything as opposed to separate from everything.
Yeah.
So I do find it, you know, life, you know, I never understood more than I do now the cliche of the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, well, that's how my life was, you know, the first half of my life. I mean, the scenery changes, but the emotional challenges were just one way on the same thing over and over and over again. I just kept creating the same thing over and over because I was not taking responsibility for creating it. And unless
right.
you take responsibility for creating it, you have no power to change it. So that's where the empowerment comes from, you know, accepting the fact that, yes, I am the creator of my life, so I can jolly well create what I want and
yes.
what I don't want. And but that doesn't happen unless, because you can't, if you don't acknowledge the feeling or you don't acknowledge the fact that you are doing it, you're giving what you are attracting back, then there's no way to change what you're giving.
Well, right, because if you're waiting for the, you know, if you're waiting for the mirror to change, the mirror doesn't smile until you smile. That's just...
Yeah, it's only a reflection. It has no power beyond...
Exactly.
Yeah, no power.
Exactly. Yeah, these are deep concepts, you know. I am, because another thing I'm having for the first time in my life, and this actually started late last year, is I have a sense that for the first time in my life, I'm supposed to be here right now. And I have never have I felt that way on planet Earth. I mean, not in this lifetime, not in my recollection. And I am not really, I've never been one that has been interested in past lives simply because I just knew this life stunk and I wanted out. I mean, that was, you know, I just, because I've always been a sensitive. And I didn't understand why everything was so harsh. It's like, you know, what am I? How did I end up here? And yet now I am becoming aware, not so much of past lives, because I'm a firm believer that all lives are happening simultaneously. Past and future are part of the illusions of this dimension. But, you know, the insights that I'm garnishing in this now moment are being fed to the lives that have not had that insight. And, you know, they're welcome to, you know, to bring it into their experience. And because I have a feeling this is really very much a holographic experience. As I'm becoming more aware of who I am, every life that I've ever experienced is also becoming more aware of who they are. And however that is going to unify at the end, inevitably we're going to expand so much that it's no longer past or future. It's all now. All happening, you know.
You're talking about this, you know, all of us shifting, you know, all the shift that's going on in the awareness of people around the world. And I
yep.
believe that reflects what you were talking about earlier, this wonderful thing that's happening in nature, because I think that the Earth is going through a process of rebirthing just as we're rebirthing. So
absolutely.
We are reflecting each other. And all the floods and the volcanoes and all this stuff that's happening with the weather is all about the process of the Earth rebirthing. And I have like a video on my YouTube about this idea that the birth of the Earth is no different from the birth of a child, in that the labor pains start far apart and mild, and as the birth approaches, they become more severe and closer together, which is what is happening with the Earth, and is coming to the moment of birth. And I think that's what this 2012 is all about, that the Earth is going to rebirth, and it needs to rebirth because it's a great gift to us and has to renew itself to stay around. It can't remain stagnant. It has to constantly regenerate. And so this is what the Earth is doing, because I believe we are all God personified in form, and we've created this game, and we want to understand this game, and we want to be able to play on the Earth until we do understand the game. And so it will be perpetrate itself until that happens. And that's what. And so this wonderful rebirthing that is going on should be looked at as a great gift to the Earth and to us, that it is keeping itself healthy and will do whatever it needs to keep itself healthy, and it's reflecting this wonderful awareness that is going on all over the world. And I mean, if you don't think there's been a big shift, I mean, I remember 20 years ago when I would go into Barnes & Noble and ask for the New Age department, they would look at me crazy. And today,
it was a couple of books.
Yeah, I mean, now
in the back of the store.
Now it's a whole wall. There's a whole
exactly.
wall.
Exactly.
I mean, so
it's a couple of aisles around here. It's a couple of aisles, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So there's been a huge shift, and many more people, you know, thinking about these ideas, and the Earth is now doing its own thing to reflect what's happening. So it's a very interesting time to be alive.
Yeah, once again, I'm in total alignment. In fact, the floods that happened recently in Africa,
mm-hmm.
I was I have a teacher that I follow, and she says that was the water breaking of the birth.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It's happening pretty many places, because the floods are happening in a lot of places.
Yeah, well, I guess Africa, though, has a lot of significance. There's a lot of cultures and say that, you know, the birth of humanity came from Africa.
Australia is going through it now, too. And
Australia is going. I saw that,
yeah.
Yes. The Aussies, yes.
Many of places in this country it's gone through. So it's
right.
all part of the process. It's just, you know, it's just nature. It's what the Earth has to do.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because I just want to say one other thing, because this was an insight I got too, actually directly from the planet. You know, I remember when I went to therapy when I turned 30. You know, first one in my family. Imagine that. People used to say that about college. I say that about therapy now. But they labeled me bipolar. The therapist labeled me bipolar, and I said, listen, you can label me whatever you want. There's just no prescription going on, because I won't take, you know, I just got out of drugs. I'm not going into another drug. You know, that's just not my gig. I want to be sober. I want to be aware. And then it hit me recently that, you know, the Earth has two poles. So if I'm a microcosm of the macrocosm, of course I'm bipolar. Everybody's bipolar, and I think the ones that are calling it a negative are the ones that are still singly looking at the world through the illusion only, and that you know, they haven't started having the awakening symptoms yet. That's why they're labeling bipolar as a negative. So this seems like a great time to share that. So I wanted to share that. Yeah, You're welcome on the show anytime you want. Now, Betsy, tell me about Otter. What is the Otter reference?
I would like to tell you that it is this major significance, but it's my maiden name.
Oh.
Yeah. Are you hearing it?
Well, I'll be honest with you, though. Clearly, I mean, you really do have Otter in you. I mean, because I put it in quotes, I believe, because I wasn't sure. You know, I mean, I was not born Golden Hawk. But, you know, quick story around that. My name was Cindy, and I reached a frequency of awareness that everybody called me Sin, and I went. You know, not even, forget the religious connotation, sin is actually an archery term, and it means to miss your mark. And so when people would go, hey, sin, and I'd go, yeah, I was like, I'm acknowledging I'm going to miss my mark? Oh, I don't think so. I was like, you know, universe, you better, I didn't even pick it, I had a vision, but I was like, whatever name you give me, I don't care, I'm open to it, just make sure the nickname has the same frequency, you know, as the name itself, and Golden Hawk, you know, actually Golden Hawk Feather was what the name that this shamanic vision gave to me. Mm-hmm. And for a while I kept Golden Hawk Feather, and then I was like, I didn't want Hawk to be the middle name. I really resonated deeply with, you know, animals my whole life I've resonated with, and I was like, I want Hawk to be prevalent, so I dropped the feather and, you know, became a Golden Hawk.
Okay.
That was an interesting one, getting over on, you know, the Jewish engineer we call my father.
Okay.
Until the radio show came, that was what, you know, I was like, Dad, they want to send me checks, but my name is not, you know, they got to send them to Golden Hawk. That's when I got the, okay, you can legally change it. I got to talk his language. So, yeah, well, I was interested. I didn't realize it was your maiden name. But I'm telling you, your otter is a very it's a very playful animal, and
it is.
Yeah, you clearly have playful in you. You know, it's you, 'cause now you grew up in the West, or you grew up on the East Coast?
I grew up on the East Coast, and then are you hearing an echo with my voice right now?
Am I what?
Hearing an echo with my voice? I don't know whether it's my headphone is acting up or.
I'm not hearing it, but if you're hearing it, you want to hang up and call back or something?
That's okay.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. If it gets annoying, it only take a few seconds. So if you need that, I have no problem, you know, creating that for you. So
no, that's okay. Now, what did you ask me? Oh, I'm up from the East Coast.
Where you grew up?
I'm from the East Coast. Yeah, I'm from right outside of Philadelphia, and I lived here until I went to New York, and then I went to California, and I was in California for about 25 years altogether. And then when I retired, I decided that I would come back to the East Coast, would be close to my children and my grandchildren, and so that's where I am now. But I decided if I could, you know, write anywhere that I would like to be here, and I like the changing of seasons. But California was good for me while I was there, because California has they're very open about people's ideas and philosophies, and they don't really care what you believe or what you do as long as you don't bother anybody else while you're doing it. And that was good for me while I was there. It was very liberal, and people are friendly, and so it was good that way. It's good for me. It's a good place. It's forward-thinking people are in California for the most part. It's nice. But I'm happy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've actually never been. I've been to California for a workshop, and I only stayed the weekend, and I've always had a draw. One of the things that I'm getting is, for whatever the reason, I live in Connecticut, Fairfield County, which is an extremely affluent area. In fact, I think it might be, my boss said that we're the most affluent county in America. But I'm not sure. I think Beverly Hills and here, basically, you know, there's one on that coast, there's one on this coast.
Yeah.
Every time, like, I tried to, I did move. I moved to Buffalo, New York. I've moved to other areas. There's, like, this magnetic thing that, you know, it just turns on and I get pulled back, whether, you know, something happens and I'll lose my job, or I'll lose money, you know, I'll get into a car wreck where I have to all of a sudden drop a ton of money and I don't have, you know, the funds or whatever. But I'm really hoping that once this shift in consciousness, you know, happens, because it's not just about 2012. I mean, the Earth is going to go through a pole shift, which is clearly going to affect the human race, just like, you know, we all kind of know it's going to, you know, meaning even science knows that, you know, when we go to zero point and the fluctuating magnetism, and it's going to affect all of us. I'm really hoping that once we go through all that, whatever magnetics have held me in Fairfield County, because, you know, it's interesting when I share with people that, you know, this whole county is about, you know, Gucci handbags and Manano, Lomano, Blahnik shoes, you know, and I'm buying hiking boots and, you know, sweatpants and, you know, I've always said, what, how did I should be in the Midwest, like Montana or Colorado. You know, how I ended up here is humorous. But the more time, the more consciousness, the more aware I become, I really get that, you know, we're placed in places in our lives, you know, to hold a frequency. Because the planet itself is actually, you know, really in need of certain things from the humans, just like there's certain cells in my body that I'm in need of to be, you know, the basic eight cells. They say, you know, that the whole DNA is like that. I can have a cell from my liver, and if my heart needs some cells, well, cells from my liver will change being a liver, go to my heart, and, you know, do the heart work. And I'm all about the kind of, like, I come from this whole awareness thing from science turned me on initially, and now I'm realizing, you know, through, you know, whether it's quantum physics or, you know, the work that, like, Bruce Lipton is doing with DNA and biology, or Greg Braden's work with geology, everybody's talking about the same thing, even if they're talking about, one is talking about the planet, one is talking about the body, one is talking about the solar system. You know, it's all us.
Yeah.
I saw
a video of Greg Braden on Facebook, which was wonderful. And I loved about the body being able to heal itself. Part of those ideas are in the book and Walking Through Illusion, and that it works with the pulling of energy back to itself works the same way in terms of dis-ease, because dis-ease is dis-ease. So if we give dis-ease to other people, we are, and everyone is one, and everyone you face is yourself, then you are giving dis-ease to yourself as you give it to others. And so to heal from dis-ease is to recognize where you have given the dis-ease to others. And I had this wonderful instantaneous healing that I went through that I would love to share with you.
Please, of course.
I had this lump on my back, and I was leery of it, and my doctor was leery of it because I have a history of cancer in my family. And so I went in to see the doctor. She had me said to come in the day that I called her, and she felt the lump, and she said, well, I think you ought to go in tomorrow morning for an MRI right away. So she scheduled it for me, and I went home after seeing her, and I went to my little book with Louise Hay, and her book about what, you know, what causes this and that, and I looked up lump, and it was about holding grudges and resentments. And the minute I saw that, I knew what was happening. I knew that I was holding this grudge against a relative of mine, reliving the way I thought she had hurt me. You know, when I came back east, all those old memories started coming back. And
right.
So I realized how I've been reliving this and nurturing it for the last 3 months or so, you know, resenting again, all those feelings of resentment and coming up. So I did a deep meditation, and I started, what I did was, what I always say I should do, is which think of why, what had happened and how had I grown from this relative way. What had I gained? What had I discovered about myself from this relative being this way, so that I could look at her as a gift instead of a curse in my life at that time? And so I went into this deep meditation, releasing her, and it was one of the deeper meditations I've ever had. And during the meditation, I felt this light, sort of like a creamy light, come all the way up through my body and all the way up to the top of my head. And I'm getting goosebumps just telling you about this again.
Nice.
So what happened was I went in for the MRI the following morning because I had scheduled, and I had the MRI, and then I came home, and my doctor called me and said, well, then the MRI came back, and they couldn't find the lump. And so I told her what I had done, because I'm very honest these days, and I won't have a doctor unless I can be honest with her. I told her what I had done and that I felt that I had released it in the meditation. And she said, well, okay, but come in here. I want to take a look anyway. So I went in to see her in the afternoon, and she couldn't find the lump.
Wow.
So it was gone. So all about work, doing the work inside about where I had given this, you know, where I was holding this. And it didn't matter that I didn't say anything to this person, because you don't have to say anything for them to feel how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, you know, people in your presence, they don't have to tell you they're angry at you. You know they're angry if they're angry.
Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's all about the idea that you don't have to be in the presence of people for them to receive your emotions and what you're going through. And so, and also in the other way, when I released her, you know, I'm sure she could feel that too. So it was a big thing, you know, and this is what the book is about also. You know, what you send towards other people, you send towards yourself. So while I was begrudging and resenting her, my body was receiving it and reacting.
You know, isn't that just brilliant, though? I mean, because I love the idea of what comes around goes around.
Yeah.
I really do, because it's the ultimate, for me, it's the ultimate equalizer of all things that I remember, at least at this point. And I mean, my memory is also, it's amazing. As I heal the wounds of my childhood, and many of them are healed, I don't even, you know, I don't remember the incidences. You know, I mean, I used to what they call lead with my wounds.
Mm-hmm.
That was a phrase a friend coined with me, and I thought it was brilliant. She was like, don't lead with your wounds, lead with your accomplishments.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was in the early part of my awakening, and I was like, oh, yeah, huh? I mean, like, because I would shake people's hands and go, hi, I'm Goldie. I've been molested. Well, that's an interesting thing to say on a first date. Okay. But, you know, it's like, it's what I thought of it.
You're taking
Pardon?
You were taking that as your identity.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting because I just recently healed victim consciousness in me. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, the way you heal victim consciousness is you invite in a victimizer. And, you know, it's funny because I have a real, I have a bravado about me. There, you know, I don't know if it's because my parents were both, you know, born and raised in New York, and I was raised in Connecticut, and Connecticut is nowhere near like Brooklyn and the Bronx and Jamaica, Queens. You know what I mean? The whole mentality is so different, but people have this kind of sense about me, you know, that I don't know. They initially just go, yeah, I don't know. Almost like never mess with somebody crazier than yourself, because you just don't know what they'll do. I mean, I remember that statement, and I think people apply that to me.
Right.
But the beauty of it is that I never had violence. My whole gig was fear and sadness, fear and sadness. I mean, it was clear. I put it out there. That's what I got back.
Right.
But in order for me to get a realization, and I mean a clarity that was just pinpoint, the victim consciousness, I had to have a victimizer in my life that was strong enough to do this. And ironically, it's an autistic man. Because autism, I am fascinated with autism. From a human conscious point of view, I don't believe it's a disability at all, other than the way we label it and box it and clearly don't explore it, but, you know, say it's a limiting experience in this dimension, therefore it must be limiting. You know, from an early childhood educator point of view, that is just ludicrous. It's ludicrous because autism is really about people that are just connected interdimensionally and always have been, and you know, they're just looking for confirmation like the rest of us are looking for confirmation. But the point that I'm trying to get is that the victimizer was so penetrating. It's like, and you know, all my friends are like, you got to get out of this relationship. And I was like, I'll get out of it when I'm stop attracting to be in it, because this is me.
Yeah.
This is me. And it was an amazing experience. And, you know, I'm kind of like, you know those shows that say, don't try this at home, folks, we're professionals? I swear to God, Betsy, I told my friends, I'm not telling you to go out there and be in a physically abusive relationship, but I have to do this because I can't leave a piece of me unaware. My goal is to fully ascend and to completely come into balance and integration, and I wouldn't have attracted this into my life if it wasn't me. So here I am, and, you know, I mean, he's actually still in my life, and the more I become aware of all of this, again, really supporting the works of your book, when I don't put it out there, because I saw one night where I went into the moment, I saw it myself go into the victim mode,
right.
And he, within 30 seconds, went into victimizer. I mean, it was like, it clicked,
right.
And it was so clear. And for me, that clarity is worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Because when
that's
I
like
drove
living,
home...
Like living with awareness, that's what you're doing. You're living
it's
with
exactly
awareness.
What it is, which has been my intention to do for the last 10 years.
Right.
Because when I called him that night crying in absolute joy, and I'm telling you, he had just, you know, he had been throwing food at me and the flowers we bought. It was so interesting. Because another thing that was very interesting, which helped me to understand how he really is my reflection,
mm-hmm.
he would always get to the brink of physically hurting me and never would. I have never been physically harmed. I've been threatened to be physically harmed. He has thrown roses at me. He's thrown a T-shirt at me, a pillow. You know, you can clearly throw things. You want to throw things. You can throw things that can, you know, break a face and break a bone. That never happened to me because in my world, I don't need my face to get broken to understand victimization. I need to be victimized in order to understand my victimization.
Yeah.
Because that really is it's my projector. It's my movie making this. And when I called him that night, the last one that we had, by my awareness, the following day, he, for the first time, took responsibility. He was like, I went over the edge, you know, I apologize. And I went, you apologize? I mean, he's never apologized for screaming and going off the hook.
But the thing
and
is,
again, it's directly in correlation. It
yes.
cannot not be.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly right. You teach by example. You teach by example.
Exactly.
I'd like to share something with you about the victimization idea too. Because
please, because I think it's prevalent in our culture.
Well,
so yeah.
Interestingly enough, it has to do with the book and getting published because I had the last book was published by the Hampton Roads, but the Hampton Roads was having financial trouble, and then they were bought out by Red Wheel Wiser, and so they weren't the publisher for the next book. So I had to find another publisher. So I went onto the internet and I did this thing called Publishers and Agents to see if I could find an agent or a publisher, and had an agent respond, and she said that she had a publisher in mind for the book, but if that publisher said no, then she didn't have anybody else in mind, and would I want her to try on my behalf, knowing that? And I said sure. So she approached the publisher, and she sent the book to him. And he responded, no. But he said, he told her why he said no. He gave her three reasons. And she said it was very rare for a publisher to do that because publishers, they're too busy. They can't be bothered to tell you why they don't want the book. They just say no. But he had given
right.
her three reasons why he said no. And she shared those ideas with me. And the minute I saw the ideas, I realized how they would make the book so much better. So I spent the next 3 months rewriting the first three chapters. I was determined I wasn't going to let this get me down. You know, my first reaction was, well, so, you know, so what if he doesn't like it? You know, that's his
right. Right.
You go and
right.
And I was looking at the ideas, and I thought, well, wait a minute. You know, these are really good ideas.
I love it. I love it.
So I used the three. I wrote the next 3 weeks I spent, you know, rewriting the first 3 chapters with his ideas incorporated. And then I wrote her a letter, and I said, you know, he gave these ideas to you, and frankly, I think they're absolutely fantastic ideas. And so what I did was, and I told her what I did, I rewrote the first three chapters, and I attached them in the email to her. And I said, you know, if you would you mind just reading, you know, a little bit of this to see if you think it's better, and if you do, maybe sending it back to him for him to look at again. And she not only did that, she sent him the email I had sent to her praising him for the three ideas. And 2 weeks later, he said he wanted to publish the book.
Oh, fantastic.
So
I love
like
it.
Instead of getting angry and you know,
yeah.
saying, oh, well, he can just F off for, you know, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right. This is my book. Don't you tell me how to write my
right,
book.
Right.
Right.
So I let that be, you know, like a message or a gift from God and ran with it. And so, you know, that was a wonderful lesson for me in not letting myself feel victimized when there was really nothing to be victimized about.
Right. Right.
That was,
you know, one of the things that I have found, too, is twice in one of these bouts that we have had, I literally have felt, you know, because you heard me how in the beginning of my show I invite my presence in and I invite everybody to invite their presence in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't just do this on Thursday nights when I do my show. I'm backing off of it a little at this point, only because at this point I don't believe there is my presence is already in me. I don't have to invite it anymore. But for the listeners, you know, I support this. Let's keep inviting it on Thursday nights. When twice.
Yeah, I have a great idea though. I have
pardon?
A great idea around that idea. You could
okay.
you could invite, you know, every presence who wanted to be present.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I get the feeling presence is, this whole idea of us being one, presence is just one being.
Right, but just invite, you know, every energy that wanted to participate to come and be there and be vibrant instead of saying that, you know, that the energy was once separate and now wasn't separate. You know, I don't think we're ever separate from our soul either. I agree with you. The soul is with us every single second. And
yeah.
So, but you could invite, like, you know, the idea of being really inclusive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that word because that is a quality of the soul. The inclusivity is absolutely unified and soulful. So thank you. Thank you. I will I'll consider that and, you know, work that into it. Because one of the things I got is that when this gentleman was having one of his bouts, I mean, here's the best way I can explain it. My presence dropped even more into my physical being, and rage is something that is an unconscious attribute. He could not stay unconscious in the presence of my presence.
Mm-hmm.
He became present, and in that presence had no desire to hurt me, no desire to lash out at me, immediately let go of me. There was this presence between us, and we were literally 6 inches away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it happens twice, but I recognize when it happens, and I look at him, and I go, okay, got to go. This is my exit move. But this is something that I believe happens at the point of, because I kept thinking when it happened, I was like, I think I was ready to die. To be quite honest, it's like there's this total surrender because I have no fear. And, I mean, one of them, his hand was around my neck. And he never squeezed, but he was clearly looking like he wanted to. And when it happened, I literally just went into total peace because a part of me, because I've done the drugs and I've had the depressions and all that, I've come to terms. I've also worked with shamans who help you understand that death is really, we should die 1,000 deaths in our lives because then you'll realize there's nothing to be afraid of.
Right.
But that's really where I got. I was just completely not afraid of the moment. And it's a presence that, it's tangible. it's tangible. Even those unconscious, you know, I think it's, I would imagine you might have that experience when you're channeling your books and that kind of nature, where the wisdom, like you said, all your information was accurate, yet you didn't have that, quote-unquote, from a linear space. You know, you didn't go to the library and get that information and then write about it. You just had access to, you know, the presence of the information.
Right, right.
And it's really, you know, like I said, I'm not advocating for anybody to do these kind of things at home, but I'm also an advocate that if you stay within the box of your beliefs, life will come at you in always from the, you know, unpredictable. You know, like I used to say, if I'm going to walk down the street and somebody's just going to come out of left field and cold cock me in the mouth, well, I'd rather do a frequency thing in my brain that puts me into the same chaos, but I'm doing it consciously. Because I can handle chaos when it's me choosing to do it. It's when it's me not choosing to do it that it happens, because that was my first sign of empowerment, that what we talk about, how our curse becomes our gifts. Okay, well, if that's the case, then I literally was like, bring on the chaos. You know, I did a thing called Holosync that would purposely scramble my brain in order to make it whole brain functioning. And I was doing this in, you know, the early 2000s, and my friends were like, you know, they would know when I was changing a level, because I would become a lunatic. You know, I was scrambling my brain. You don't exactly become a peaceful, you know, quiet experience. Your brain is being scrambled. And they were like, what the hell are you doing, Goldie? And I'm like, I'm doing what you're going to do when the planet is going through it. I'm just doing it consciously. And it's like I knew that.
Yeah.
And so it's just an interesting space to go into, you know, the whole conscious awareness. But I'll tell you, presence is the ultimate space, because I really believe that if like we're about to get into a car accident that it ultimately will end our lives, I really believe from my experiences, you're already hovering above your body even before the car accident it happens. Like, you don't have to live, and this is not everybody, but I think many of us, you watch yourself in spirit even before the actual moment of death.
I think that's because true. I think that's very true. I remember being in a bad accident when I was broadsided, and
okay,
in the moment before impact, I said, "Oh, I'm in a dream."
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that amazing? I just had that moment of just complete clarity,
total clarity, and total peace. Right?
Oh yes, I'm in a dream.
Yes.
Yeah, it was,
yes.
It was amazing.
And see, that's the gift that these really crazy, jarring things, you know, because I know it's all about being safe and it's all about, you know, use that hand sanitizer because we don't want any germs on our hands. But, you know, sometimes you got to remember, we came to a polar dimension. Maybe there's something to be experienced in these poles that really is not a negative. It's a beautiful awareness that, like you just said, it's all just a dream.
Yeah, but
you know, waking up in the dream is a powerful space to be in.
Yeah, it is. In fact, when you were telling me about this being, you know, being in your presence in that moment with this guy,
yeah,
I was thinking that what was really happening was the God within you was connecting with the God within him.
Absolutely.
In this moment of complete honesty.
And absolutely.
I remember this moment that I had, the only moment I can ever remember of honesty with my mother. And I had asked her, as a teenager, I went to her one day and I asked her, I said, I want to know why you are mean to me and you aren't mean to my sisters. And she
okay.
said to me, because you're the most vulnerable.
Oh,
and I
wow.
thought, as awful as that was to hear, it was honest.
Absolutely.
And in that moment, I respected her for speaking the truth.
Absolutely.
Even though it was a horrible thing to hear. And I didn't understand what was going on in terms of, you know, because I was so vulnerable, but I knew it was the truth, and I knew she was speaking from the God within her. She was speaking a truth. And so I think that's what happens when people are really connecting. Each person is connecting with the God within the other person, even if they don't like what they're hearing. know.
Right, but when we're in the connection, there's nothing you can't hear that will, there is no being offended in that space.
Oh,
I mean, his hand was around my, I was ready to die, and I'll be honest with you, completely okay with it. Because, I, you know, and I have said to him, listen, if you're going to do it, just be efficient. Don't get me paralyzed. I will kick your ass if you paralyze me. I don't mind dying because I already know it's not the end. I know that. You know, I, and I'm telling you, I get that, you know, I don't have fan mail or anything, but I have friends that go, I can't believe you say that stuff on the air. And it's like, listen, this is just Goldie being Goldie.
Yeah.
Speaking my truth, and it's just, it's my truth. You don't have to live by it. It's my truth.
Right.
And nothing has brought me more peace than living this truth.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Listen, I want to share your website,
okay,
which is please, you share. Go ahead.
www.betsythompson.com. And you can learn more about the book if you go there, and you can order the book from there. And you can go to my blog and Twitter and Facebook.
Excellent. And we became friends, right? We are friends on Facebook. So
we are, yeah.
If you want to connect to Betsy through my Facebook, you can go through my friends and connect with her there. I also very quickly want to read this to you. Okay, ready?
Yep.
Women's healing wisdom, sensibility without suspicion, guidance in unmasking talents, psychic awareness, faithfulness, recovery issues, understanding the value of playtime. That is Otter's wisdom.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Where'd you get that?
I got that from animalspirits.com.
Wow.
Check it out. I said, I'll bet you dollars to donuts it's going to hit.
Did you email that to me?
I would be delighted to email that to you. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
So, Betsy, what a divine pleasure. I hope you'll join us again several times, because I love that you share stories. I love your wisdom. I resonate deeply with everything you share. And if I get the book group going, at some point what we'll do is we'll have, well, and also you're on the East Coast, so I'll maybe even have you come up.
Okay.
But I'll have some of the people from the group come on, and you come on, and we can all just discuss the book and how it's shifting us. And, you know, that's always fun to do.
That's
but
great.
No matter what, I think you're fantastic. It's an honor and a privilege to share with you. I'm glad you're on the planet right now.
Thanks.
And it's been a privilege. It's been a pleasure. I enjoyed tonight very much.
Well, I did too. I love being a guest. Thank you so much for inviting me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And I'll speak to you privately, because inevitably, I want all the books. Bring your stuff. I want to read, because I'm a better interviewer when I read the books. Even if it's because I don't know how to explain something. I'm still a better interviewer because I've read your books.
Okay.
All right, love. You have an amazing week, and I will definitely email you that Otter's Wisdom. And everybody, next week is Third Thursday. So as of right now, I will be doing Osho Zen Tarot card readings. Give us a call if you have a question or you want to have a reading. All right, I love everybody. I will see you on Facebook and talk to you next week. Bye. Bye now.
Bye.